Wow, what a difference a week makes. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, Barry. It's very good to be back with you. And yeah, what a difference a week does make in a number of things, because I'm looking outside and it's young spring, about 17 days early, I think.
Well, you look at it this way. We went from February to March. We've gone from winter to spring, pretty much. It's supposed to get cold again and have some snow over the weekend. So by the time people are listening to this, they may be looking at it like, what do they think they're talking about?
Well, no, Saturday it's supposed to be 50-something.
Right, but hopefully we'll get a nice day for this.
Yeah.
You have gone from daylight savings time to, reminder folks, tomorrow, Sunday. When you hear this on Saturday, you need to roll your clocks ahead. Spring forward, folks, on Sunday, and you lose that hour of sleep, and you have to hustle to get to church a little bit faster or whatever else you're doing on Sunday mornings. Yeah, so what a difference a week makes, Chuck. Oh, there was one other little thing, too.
That's right.
Something about an election.
Yeah, what's the deal with that? There was some election on Tuesday. Yes, I heard something about it.
I heard a few things about it, like 14 different things is what I heard.
14, dude. Is that all you heard?
Is that all I heard? Yeah, that was about all I heard. Yeah, well, you know, the first week in March used to be, in Ohio law,
right,
the week we would all go to the ballot box, because Ohio had to be one of the early decider states. Yep. Woohoo! Yay! Yeah. Well, to the point that back in the late 90s, early 2000s, Chuck, we actually changed Ohio law to require that during a presidential election year, the primary in Ohio be moved up to that first Tuesday in March, right? And that on non-presidential election years, the other years, the other 3 years in that four-year cycle, the primary is on the first Tuesday in May. And that's the way it's been ever since. And you had members right. grumbling about going out and having to collect signatures and knock on doors in a blizzard or in the snow or in the ice.
Right.
Well, this year they kind of got off easy because there wasn't that much. It was just rain. But then a funny thing happened on the way to the ballot box. It seems that at least the RNC, and then maybe the DNC did this too, but especially the Republican National Committee, who set the rules for the Republican Party's structures on how they go about voting in the states, came out with a rule that basically said that if you tried to move your primary up too far, that you would be penalized when you get to the convention. So your state would get penalized.
You lose delegates.
You lose delegates. So because you're trying to leapfrog everybody, because what happened was a bunch of states started trying to do that, and everybody was trying to get earlier than everybody right. else. And what I think the RNC feared was we would have our first January New Year's Day primary.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to go there. And I don't blame them. I don't want to go there either.
Think about it. You really don't have time to develop a narrative for your campaign.
Well, really, that's a big part of it. But they just got tired of all these states trying to playing one-upmanship.
Yeah, sure.
But Ohio kind of got caught in that because we'd already changed our laws prior to the RNC making this rules change. So what have we done this cycle? Well, we did a little provision to say, well, we'll have to move it back. And we did this the last couple of cycles, too, but it's because of the way the month falls. This one's falling a lot later than normal. So Ohio's primary is not this week.
No.
We were not one of the 14 states who were holding primaries and caucuses and other things called Super Tuesday. That was what Ohio was trying to do, was get to be a part of Super Tuesday so that they could become like the bellwether state that is the big draw on Super Tuesday. Unfortunately, they're not going to be doing that, and states like Florida and Texas and California are going to be on Super Tuesday. So Ohio's primary, and this is a reminder for you folks to put it on your calendars, is on Tuesday, March the 17th on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Now, you know what? If I had been a smart candidate, or if candidates had been smart, they would have picked their campaign colors as green.
Well,
that way on St. Patty's Day, everybody would be wearing green going to the ballot, and you could possibly have gotten away with wearing your candidate's colors, maybe not their name or anything on a T-shirt, because there are a few rules about not electioneering at a polling place.
Little handout T-shirts, the wearing of the green.
The wearing of the green.
What does the wearing of the green mean to you?
Yeah, yes. Sorry, something like that.
Yeah, think about that. Just remember this, folks. Alcohol and voting don't mix.
Well, see, Chuck, you're making a presumption that everybody's going to get soused on St. Patrick's. Okay, maybe you're not making a presumption. Yeah, maybe you're talking from experience. I don't know.
No, I am part Irish.
However,
I'm a little different. My people do not wear green on St. Patrick's
Day.
Ah,
you're Irish Protestant.
Yes, we wear orange.
You wear orange. That's right.
And that comes, of course, from the Protestant side. And what's it about? It's about William of Orange.
Yes.
Who was William III, mm-hmm. who the Northern Irelanders consider a hero.
Mm-hmm, yes.
The Southern Irelanders, yeah, not so much.
Yeah, for the it got the Irish Republic.
Yes, my grandmother, we'd say something about wearing green on the 17th, and she would be like, "Don't you dare."
That's right.
Her name was Farrell.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay.
Shortened, I think, from O'Farrell.
O'Farrell or Farrelly or something like that.
Yeah, so she was a little bit that way. It wasn't like she was a real strong Protestant, let me tell you. That was Christmas and Easter sometimes. This 17th thing is very interesting. It was a way to work it in, essentially. There are all kinds of weird dates on primaries, especially in the South.
Yes.
For instance, South Carolina.
I had theirs last Saturday.
Saturday.
And you know what? I actually see some logic in that.
So
because
do
then
I.
People don't have to take time away from work, mostly. I mean, there are people who work Saturdays or work six-day weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
But you don't have to take as much time away from work to go vote, which possibly increases turnout. And there are other factors that can play a role in that. So I really didn't have any problem with the way South Carolina ran theirs. Because honestly, I kind of wish Ohio would go to a weekend ballot, to a Saturday ballot or something of that nature. Because right now, I'm seeing notices where schools are going to be giving their teachers an in-service day and giving their kids a day off on election day. Now, some people think that, that's because, you know, they're trying to like jump the vote for so-and-so. Well, not necessarily.
No.
It's probably because the school's a polling place.
It's getting to be a safety issue. They don't want people in and out of the school, especially with a ballot place in there. Who knows what some whack job might do?
Well, I mean, come on. We know who's running in this primary, Chuck. So, you know, think about it. You could have Bernie Bros on one side and Bidenites on the other. And as we've seen from Super Tuesday, sometimes that's like mixing gasoline in a match.
Absolutely.
Because there were some incidents that happened after Super Tuesday when Joe Biden was basically making his victory speech or whatever you might have called that thing.
Yes.
A bunch of Bernie Bros decided they were going to protest in the middle of the room, and a bunch of Biden supporters decided that they weren't going to have that. And well, I don't think anything major came out of it, but you really don't want that at a polling place around little kids.
No, and think about what happened there, too. This is what's interesting. It was anti-dairy Bernie supporters.
Okay.
If you listen to the audio of that thing, kill dairy, kill dairy. They kept screaming, kill dairy.
Okay.
Okay. Where's Bernie from?
He's from Vermont.
What's the big main output in one of the main outputs in Vermont?
Maple syrup.
What else?
Cute postcards?
It's a dairy state.
Yeah, it's a dairy state. That's right.
Now, one of the reasons that Ben and Jerry's, a progressive ice cream company, and I will plead guilty here to having visited the original plant, and guess what? I won a peace pop for answering all the questions at the educational film. They run you through and show you the educational film, and I answered all the trivia questions. And so the only NRA member probably on record, I'm not a member of the NRA right now, but I have been in the past, and NRA member who won a peace pop at Ben and Jerry's, and they've got all this stuff.
Are you saying you're kind of a crunchy con? Is that what you're telling me?
I am not. We would go in there, and they had all this stuff. Send your senator stand here and have your picture taken, and send your senator the picture saying you support gun control. And I said, well, no snapping pictures. I told people that you are not allowed to snap pictures of me anywhere near this booth. There were all kinds of stuff. It was all political action stuff.
Oh, of course.
By the way, they do make good ice cream, but I don't eat it because, you know, why?
Because reasons, yeah.
Now, Ben and Jerry are actually out, they sold out years ago just because it got too big for them. nonetheless, they used the money that they got for progressive causes.
Now, I'm sure they did.
That being said, you had these Bernie bros who were anti-dairy from a guy who's from a dairy state who essentially is not going to go that far outside the box of his constituency.
I believe Bernie Sanders has the exact same philosophy that Jesse Helms used to have, who was from South Carolina.
South Carolina.
And Jesse
North
Helms.
He was from North Carolina.
Carolina. Excuse me. Yeah. I said South. I meant North. We were talking about South Carolina a minute ago.
Right.
Sorry about that. But he was from North Carolina. And I've always heard stories from a lot of the politicos that when you went to meet with Jesse Helms, talk to him about an issue, he would basically, before he answered you about whether or not he'd support the issue, he'd lean back and he'd open his center desk drawer. And he'd look down and he'd look up. And then he'd say yes, usually, to supporting just about whatever you wanted him to support. He had a little list in his desk, and it was like the three items, and I think it was three, that he would never vote against. And, of course, in Carolinas, what was that?
Tobacco.
Tobacco?
Oh, gosh. I'd have to rack my brain a little more to get beyond tobacco.
Well, it was mainly tobacco, but it also livestock issues.
Okay, yeah, you that know, makes I, sense.
Yeah,
it's a farm state.
It's a big farm and cattle state. And I think that the third one was he would not vote against it, timber issues.
There would be certain pharmaceutical issues down there because of the
research triangle. But really, the research triangle formed toward the end of Helms's career.
Yeah, because he helped get it.
He helped get it going, but I think he was out of the Senate by that time. But I'm sure that Bernie's got his own little list, and it says maple syrup and dairy and vacation pictures or something of that nature for Vermont.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what made that interesting. Now, what's interesting is starting to look at the demographics.
Uh-huh.
I listened to Breitbart. Folks, if you have Sirius XM in your car, get the app for your phone because you can listen to Breitbart Radio. I don't listen during the afternoon because it's Sean Hannity and Mark Levin, who neither one. I mean, Sean Hannity's okay, but
I'm sure they say they don't listen to us for the same reason.
Right. Sean Hannity essentially he invites all these guests on his show. All you do is got to watch it.
And then talks over them.
No, and then interviews himself.
Yeah, okay, that's what I'm saying. He talks over them.
Yeah. He says, he'll ask the question that's about 20 minutes long, and he says, what do you think about that?
And he says, I feel such and such.
I understand what you're saying, Sean. Okay, well, here's my next question.
Basically, yeah.
Well, that being said, at night, they sometimes do some analysis of the day's events. Rebecca Mansour and some of the people who write out of Breitbart. And I listened to their Super Tuesday, and they were hitting it on the head pretty much. They had guys who were calling it. Now, they have disagreements, which is fine, because Barry and I have disagreements. We still kind of disagree that Michelle Obama is going to be in the mix. I can see it, but I still don't think it's going to happen for the presidential thing. But they were talking about the demographics. Bernie did very well in states where heavy immigration is from Hispanic countries from South America. They want to come here to freedom, but they want to make us into Venezuela, is basically what he's saying. So Bernie does very well with Hispanics, which is why he won California, which is why he won Utah, which is why he won a couple other states. He's got heavy support in socialist supporting Hispanics. Where Biden did well, black voters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you saw that little thing.
If you saw that
little dust up, and it was in Texas,
mm-hmm,
where the Bernie bros, the Kildare guys, rushed the stage, and immediately some of Biden's black supporters came in and sort of shuffled them off.
Right.
So we had a near race riot at a Biden victory speech.
Which is another reason why if your schools in your area are going to close on March the 17th, you should be happy that they are.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea. In the old days,
problematic.
In the old days, I got it because when I was in high school, the local precinct for that area voted in the library, and they just closed the library and set up the voting machines, and you went in there and voted. And we got to see all the people coming in and out, and it was a lesson in civics.
All right, absolutely.
That was when people were civil.
Well, you do have to have that in order to make civics work.
Yes.
So,
yeah. Right now, we're rapidly approaching an era that looks a lot like the mid-1850s.
Yeah, well, that's that, you want to elaborate on that for our listeners who maybe, like me, slept through some of the history classes?
The mid-1850s was the period preceding the Civil War, obviously, since that began in April of 1861.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like calling it Civil War, but we're doing it for a matter of convenience because it really wasn't a Civil War. It was a war for Southern independence is probably more correct. During the lead-up...
We'll just call it the late unpleasantness, how we say that.
The 1861 war. There was a great deal of unrest between the two sections, and it had to do with a number of things. Slavery wasn't the main issue, but let's face it, it had to do with economics and constitutional interpretation, but guess what? You can't subtract the economics of slavery out. That's why there was a battle royale, partly because the South existed on imports.
Mm-hmm.
They were an agrarian economy that relied on trade.
Of course, yes.
The North was a manufacturing power. They basically existed on the tariffs from the imported goods to the South. About 60 or 65% of the taxes, the imports, which is what the federal government ran on. Remember, folks, this is in the days before an income tax. It was illegal to pass an income tax, despite attempts to do it.
Until what, 1919?
Well, we had one during the war, and it got called unconstitutional, which forced them to get a constitutional amendment.
Right.
But so the South viewed this as basically, you're running the government on our back, but you won't give us any say. Because they were underpopulated, and it was a small population. And in any case, around 1855, things really started heating up. In the mid-1850s, it really started heating up. Now, it had heated up pretty badly in the 1830s during what was called the nullification crisis, and it had to do with a tariff. Again, over a tariff. A tariff is an import duty, and that got pushed to the side. Both sides claimed victory on that. It was called the Tariff of Abominations. In any case, things started happening. Yeah, if you've ever heard the term Bleeding Kansas.
Oh, absolutely.
Had to do with the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which basically said those territories...
When they came into the Union, one would come in slave, one would come in free.
But basically what they did was they said that they could exercise popular sovereignty. In other words, the number of people who were there could vote at the point of statehood.
Right.
And decide whether they would be a slave or free state. So what was happening? Everybody who had a vested interest was moving to the state. John Brown went there. If you've all heard of John Brown,
and that's where you usually hear that particular that nomenclature of Bleeding Kansas in relation to John Brown.
Yeah,
abolitionist.
There was a civil war in the mid 1850s in the Kansas-Nebraska territory.
Yeah.
And it was over slavery. Now, the fact is that Kansas itself didn't lend itself to slave-type economics.
Right.
It was more small farmer. It worked much better with small farmers. Nonetheless, people would move there and bring their slaves for the purpose. You know, sometimes people would bring one slave. But they wanted to be there to make sure it came in as a slave state. Why? It had nothing to do with the fact that they really wanted to spread slavery. They wanted to keep it even Steven.
Right. They wanted to keep a balance.
They wanted to keep a balance. Although there were radical slavers. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. There were radical slavers. But there were people who wanted to keep a balance to make sure the South continued to have a voice in the federal government. Because they were split heavily over this particular issue. And the same thing, the abolitionists moved to the state to make sure that more slavers couldn't come into the state, pro-slavery people. And that's why you had John Brown, basically, who got away with hacking pro-slavery people to death in their beds.
Yes.
He and his sons actually bought government surplus swords and went about attacking and murdering pro-slavery and vice versa. Let's not kid ourselves.
Well, sure. I mean, there were atrocities committed by both camps.
Right.
Let's just put it that way.
It was a time of violence.
Mm-hmm.
There was rioting in the streets of Baltimore over because Maryland was a mixed state.
Because you got to remember, for every John Brown that the North had, the South had a Nathan Bedford Forrest.
Yes, exactly. And we all know John Brown for the Harper's Ferry thing, but
I really don't know him for any of that. I know him for something that I think Mike over at the radio station would know him for, being on the cover of that one Kansas album.
Oh, that's right. Well,
which that album cover is directly tied to the Bleeding Kansas issue, because that's what that's supposed to be referencing.
Yeah, now see, if you've ever heard the term Jayhawker.
Oh, yes.
A Jayhawker was a Union guerrilla.
Okay.
A pro-union, anti-slavery guerrilla in Kansas. I forget what they called the...
Not guerrillas in the Great Eight, but gorilla as in the hit and run kind of military.
The Spanish pronunciation, it was a guerrilla.
Guerrilla.
That's yeah, right. they were unorganized militiamen who were basically fighting one another. Nowadays, it just means somebody who lives in, who goes to the right university in Kansas. You know,
absolutely.
But at the time, it was ugly. And if I remember, I'm trying to remember. Now, I get a little dusty about which one wore the pants with the red stripes.
Oh, that's Zouaves.
No. Oh, I'm talking about in the Kansas Civil War, there was a group that wore blue pants with a red stripe.
Okay, which was similar to the
Zouaves. Later, the Zouaves, yeah.
In New York, yeah.
By the way, it was discovered in the Civil War that it was a bad idea because they were really easy targets.
To spot in the green underbrush, you got this big flash of red. It's like, oh, yeah.
Hey. Yeah. Essentially, they were called border ruffians, bushwhackers. There was it was a lot of on the Missouri border.
Right.
If you know Kansas geography, it's right there. Missouri River runs between them. And a lot of people were moving into that territory for the specific purpose of making sure that it would go one way or another when it came time to create the state.
Sure, absolutely.
And in fact, there were, I think, three competing constitutions when they did.
If I remember correctly, that's right, at least three.
Yeah. Because there was voter fraud all over the place. Folks, this is what we're setting up for. We're already seeing voter fraud. We're already seeing people who are gearing up for... I can tell you, when Bernie doesn't get the nomination, watch out.
Mm-hmm.
Milwaukee is a progressive hotbed.
Yes, it is.
And what a terrible place to pick to have a convention, seriously. What a terrible place to pick to have a convention. There were, why not someplace that's a relatively neutral... Yeah, I don't know where.
I was going to say, can you pick that place for us, please, Charles?
Buffalo, New York. I don't know.
I'm not even sure that. Maybe at Chippewa at the casino.
I don't know. Yeah, or Cincinnati or someplace. I don't know. But Indianapolis.
I don't want that circus anywhere near here. Minneapolis Milwaukee's close enough.
Yeah.
So, but anyhow, to kind of get back to where we are.
Right.
Current day, and I appreciate you going back through the history lesson because we do, folks, if we don't learn from our history, we are condemned to repeat it. I'll just be quite honest with you. George Santayana was right.
Yes.
But, you know, today we're looking at Super Tuesday. It's becoming more and more evident that Joe Biden is most likely going to be the nominee unless... By the time everybody gets to Milwaukee in the heat of the summer, and let me tell you, Milwaukee, Wisconsin in the summertime is no place to be. It's not just oppressive. The bugs are horrid in that part of the country.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so, you know, we could end up with a very, very, very contentious Democrat convention. A la, was it 1968 in Chicago when they set fire to the place?
Oh, my gosh. The 1968 convention was it was essentially a riot.
There was a riot
and a police riot because the police went nuts under Daley.
Yeah.
Mayor Daley. He just basically turned the cops loose and said, bust heads.
Yeah, and they did.
And which
with
they
abandon.
Did. But nonetheless, they also had groups out there who were also attempting to bust cop heads.
Ah, well, got to be careful about that.
Of course, the cops were wearing helmets.
See, you know, the cops can bust your head, but you can't. It's going to be harder for you to bust their heads without going to jail. For it,
so. And not only that, it's just harder because they got more padding than you do.
Yeah, usually.
It's like playing football.
You're creating the riot. They're wearing the riot gear. Yeah, that's the way it works.
It's like playing flag football against guys who are fully accoutremented to play, NFL.
Pro football, that's right.
It doesn't work out so well. But, of course, there was a trial after that, the Chicago 8, because was Abby Hoffman and Bobby Seale and all these guys who essentially had conspired to create the atmosphere under which there was this rioting at the Chicago Convention.
They fomented the unrest.
Yeah, now if you remember the 1968, the candidate was?
Hubert Humphrey, right?
Hubert Humphrey.
Yeah.
Who was what?
Senile.
Okay. Yeah. No, he was the vice president.
He was the VP. That's right.
Yeah. He was Lyndon Johnson's VP. Now, who did the lefties want? They wanted to basically take over the convention, throw out the elected delegates, and bring in an ultra-progressive. And I'm trying to remember who they Eugene McCarthy.
I keep wanting to say Adlai Stevenson. But
he's dead. He was dead.
He was dead by then, yeah.
No, he wasn't an ultra-progressive. He was more of an old-time liberal.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who they did
John F.
After.
Kennedy was his vice presidential candidate when he ran against Dwight Eisenhower.
That's true. Yeah.
Got steamrolled. Remember, there were a number of them that ran in 72 because the Democratic Party made major changes in 72 based on the 68 experience because what a lot of people don't know, they think that the way we do primaries now
is the way we've always done
it. We've always done it, and it's not.
It's not even close.
No, the primary system came in really into prominence after 68.
After 1968, that's right.
It used to be state caucuses.
Absolutely was.
Which were rather tame affairs.
Yeah, well, you saw the Iowa, other than the app issue in the Iowa caucus,
yeah,
that was fairly
tame,
mundane, you know? And if you looked at previous caucuses, like when the Republicans actually have to have a caucus, like back in 2016, the Iowa caucuses were a fairly tame Monday. Everybody was going around eating, pork chop on a stick and corn on the cob and going to the state fair and doing all this other fun stuff in order to build up for the caucus.
It's a carnival atmosphere.
Pretty much.
It used to be that had them in people's houses.
Yeah, that's true.
The precincts would meet in people's houses.
In people's homes, that's right.
And they'd have, the mom and pop would cook stuff, and you'd come in and make your preference.
We'd do a potluck and a vote.
Exactly. That's the way it was done. It's really not a bad way to do it because...
I would probably vote more if there were potlucks.
It's hard to punch somebody in the face when they've just made you a
casserole. Yeah. Well, maybe not a casserole.
Not a casserole so much. An egg roll maybe.
Yeah, okay, that'll work.
Yeah, or something, a finger food of some description.
But you're right. I mean... The way that we do it now is not the way we did it in the past. As a matter of fact, the way we award, we're talking in primaries awarding delegates, but if you think in general elections awarding electoral votes, is not the way that we used to do it because the original form of the Constitution, we've talked about this before, so just a quick reminder, the original form of the Constitution was that you won a delegate by winning the district. Congressional district, however many congressional districts were in a state, you had to win the congressional district vote, popular vote, in order to be awarded the delegate or the electoral vote for that congressional district, which is basically a delegate type thing, what we have now. But we didn't have this whole situation of winner take all. Like, you have, as long as you won the aggregate number of votes in the state, you got all of the electoral votes, if you want to consider them delegates, which you don't really have to call them delegates, but they're the electoral votes. Bleh, my tongue. So now we have this situation where it's basically winner take all in all but two states. There are two states that still have a somewhat original form. And we'll leave that as if people want to email us if they want to take a guess on what those two states are.
Yeah.
We used to ask this when we did the Constitution classes. And boy, I'll tell you what, people just could not come up with those two states.
No, they can't. They can't. It was always, and I'm like, not even close.
Not even close. Nope. But if you feel like you want to do it, send us an email at director@principledpolicy.com for the two states you think it is. We might award a little prize. I think I got something in the prize box
we got lots of books.
We got lots of books and things we can give away. So anyhow.
But the word you're looking for is elector.
Elector, that's right. Well, and again, we'll say elector because that's the constitutional frame. If we roll back to the primaries, you now have delegates. you don't just have delegates anymore, Chuck, especially in the Democrat Party. And I think this changed after the 68 convention.
It actually changed more recently than that.
Well, it was after the 68, but it wasn't immediately preceding the 68. I think it was like in 1976.
After the 72 debacle.
After the 72 mess. That for the 76, they created what they consider to be super delegates.
Yeah.
Which a super delegate is a party insider who comes from whatever state they're in. So James Carville would be considered a super delegate from Louisiana.
They're party regulars.
Hillary Clinton or Bill could be considered a super delegate from New York or from Arkansas. Your party, they're the upper echelon, and usually it's the money people.
State chairman,
or the big donors.
Right.
Or whoever, whose votes, like George Orwell used to say in Animal Farm, who are just a little bit more equal than everybody else's.
Everyone is equal except the pigs, who are more equal than everyone else. That's right.
Yeah, everyone is equal in the Democratic Party except the superdelegates, who are more equal than anybody else. And that's another bone of contention right now, even after Super Tuesday. Because in Super Tuesday, like I said, 14 states went to the ballot box. They went to vote on who they wanted to pick for their nominee. And, of course, if the numbers hold up, it looks like Bernie Sanders won 4 states, including California, which is the biggest raw number of delegates.
We have 415 delegates.
Biggest raw number of delegates of any state in the union. But Joe Biden won, I think, about at least 9 states, because the 14th was Mike Bloomberg's territory. And I honestly feel sorry for the voters of American Samoa who, the day after they voted for the guy, lost their candidate because he dropped out of the race on Wednesday.
Do you know how he won?
He was probably the only person who actually go to American Samoa.
He's the only candidate who had staffers on the ground.
American Samoa. He spent $600 million, Chuck, to drop out of the race, okay? Honestly, when I saw that and you and I texted back and forth, I said, I am so glad I will not have to be barraged by the Bloomberg media blitz anymore.
I want to keep going on this because historically we need to squeeze out why there are superdelegates.
That's what we're coming back to. Yeah.
We mentioned 72, but I want to go back to the whole money and politics thing.
Fire away.
If we get time.
I think we have plenty of time to run with it.
Go on. In 72... they went to the primary system, and basically radicals took over the party.
Yes.
And in 72, they nominated a guy named George McGovern,
mm-hmm.
who at the time was really an ultra-radical.
Yes.
He was very, very, very radical. If you compare him to what we call radical now, he looked like a screaming moderate.
Yes. Okay, if you look at the candidates today, we consider Bernie Sanders to be a radical because he's pretty much an open communist. The radical of that day, George McGovern, would be Joe Biden today.
Yeah, essentially.
Essentially Joe Biden.
Yeah. So, which
tells you how far leftward the Democratic Party has really shifted.
So the dirty little secret is the party said we have to have a way of not allowing the radicals to seize control of the apparatus.
Okay, let me just stop you right there because I want to make sure I've got my logical head around this. The Democratic Party.
Yes.
Who now for the last 4 straight stinking years has been crying about how Hillary's election was stolen away from her because she won the majority of the popular vote. They're backing a thing called national popular vote, which the state of Virginia just became part of the compact because Virginia has completely gone off the left end and they're doing everything leftist. This same party you're now talking about decided that they didn't like direct democracy in their elections.
okay, the party apparatus decided they don't like direct
exactly,
democracy.
The apparatchiks who run the party don't like direct democracy.
If you listen
although
closely.
They talk a lot about direct democracy and how horrible it is that Hillary Clinton wasn't president because she got the most popular votes.
If you listen closely to the rhetoric and the discussions inside, you will hear the more radical elements talking about how the donor class are stealing the nomination.
Okay, sure. I get that because they're not going to support Bernie.
Exactly.
Yes.
In fact, they're begging the Democratic Party to step in. Okay, the way it works in the Democratic Party, if the first ballot goes by and there's no nominee, no one has a clear victory. And believe me, man, there's going to be some serious maneuvering on the floor if it's anywhere close. If a candidate doesn't have... Then the superdelegates come in and vote. And essentially, if I remember right, the superdelegates' votes count 1.5 on the second ballot.
It is on the second ballot because that's when everything gets released.
And the regular delegates go to half a vote.
Half a vote. That's right. So a superdelegate's vote's three times as powerful as a regular delegate's vote.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, in other words, we will decide the same way we used to when it was party caucuses. So basically what they're doing is they're putting on the mask of pure democracy. And then when pure democracy yields what pure democracy does yield, which is anarchy.
Chaos. Yeah, I was going to say chaos. Close enough.
Then they step in and say, well, in order for there to be order, we have to do this. And then the party itself decides who's going to be their nominee. Now, what's that going to bring us? Well, okay, probably Joe Biden seems to be the guy. Now, I'm going to do a mea culpa.
Okay.
Because I had the scenario all worked out in my head.
Okay.
We were going to go to a brokered convention.
Right.
And the guy was going to be Bloomberg.
Well... Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's going to be the case now because Mike on Wednesday morning, Bloomberg, after reassessing his campaign over on Tuesday night, decided he was pulling the plug and he was endorsing Joe Biden.
Well, the reason I came up with this conclusion, and I think it was strong reasoning, and just as usual of the currents and eddies of history kind of come in and sort of get you off course. My idea was that the fact that the Democrats are guessing they're not going to, they're more than guessing, they're calculating they're not going to win in the fall. They want to spend as little money as possible. They don't want to end up in debt for a campaign and a candidate that's going nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So let's bring in a guy who can self-fund.
Yeah.
Self-fund.
Right. And well, like I said, Bloomberg already spent $600 million of his wealth just to get where he got, and he basically
he's got 40 delegates.
40 delegates, yeah. So I get the American Samoa, I think, gave him a grand total of, what, two extras, I think? He got two delegates from American Samoa,
I forget
maybe?
How many he got out of
Samoa. I mean, he spent an awful lot of money to win very little. But Bernie didn't win very many states. But he did win California.
He won California.
Which was huge.
He got, you know, the way it's set up, it's also screwy here. You have most states have a 15% threshold before you get any delegates.
Right.
Then they're awarded proportionally. Although California does a thing where they still award delegates based on congressional district. But they also have at-large delegates.
Right. And they do that for delegates, but they don't do that in the general
election. In the general election.
It's a winner-take-all.
Right. So there were people... Tulsi walked away with a couple of delegates.
I think she may have gotten one or two, yes.
Yeah. She doesn't have many.
But she doesn't need many. All she just needs to do is stay in the race long enough in order to see it. Now, remember, Tulsi was a Bernie guy in 2016.
She was one of the Bernie girls.
She was one of the Bernie girls.
Yeah.
But during this cycle, she has been actually acting as interference for Joe Biden. If you remember one of the debates, she attacked Kamala Harris when Harris was coming on against Joe Biden. And it was painfully obvious that that's what she was doing. But I don't think it's going to benefit her, because let me just try to be not crass about this, but the Democratic insiders who are trying to get Joe Biden to be their nominee are doing so because they want to have a certain, shall we say, gender and ethnicity on the ticket with Joe Biden,
looking that
way. who is not his gender and who is not his ethnicity.
Yeah.
But is more ethnic than Tulsi Gabbard is.
Yeah, because she's a
Hawaiian Islander. Yeah.
She's a Hawaiian Islander who's a Hindu.
Yes. Yeah, it's, yeah.
It's complicated. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Barry and I, this is where Barry and I bifurcate.
Yeah, we do.
We do, because, and time will tell.
And I swear to God, I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I hope I am wrong, but if I am right, it is not for me, it's not for bragging rights, it's for basically starting to chew at my fingernails and starting to worry about what November is going to look like.
I'm not sure they're going to, okay, you want to tell them who you think it's going to be if they don't
okay,
know
well,
already?
Okay, well, here, now, I had to reassess, because with you with Bloomberg, I had to reassess, because I too thought they were going to go to a brokered convention, and it was going to be a none of the above type of thing, and they were going to bring in someone that they figured, A, would draw them more of their key targeted demographic bases back to the party that they were starting to lose, because they've got two 80-year-old white guys who are multimillionaires. As I've mentioned before, I was looking at Michelle Obama to be a dark horse replacement candidate for a brokered convention where nobody could come up with even a plurality. My scenario has changed slightly. It's still Michelle Obama.
Yep.
But it's Michelle Obama becoming the vice presidential candidate for Joe Biden, which will bring lots of African American votes back to the ticket, which are slowing off fairly quickly, and lots of female voters, and they will really, you know, because it'll be a historic moment. You know, the first African-American woman to be a part of a major ticket. But I threw another little wrinkle into the mix, because it's becoming more and more apparent, especially with that speech that Joe gave over the weekend, where he referenced the Declaration of it, something in his head, but he's not sure what it is.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Declaration of Independence. Joe Biden is starting to exhibit publicly more and more the signs of either senility or dementia.
Yeah, he's confused.
And he is going to be the Democrat nominee. Barack Obama has been on the phone, and it's been publicly noted that Barack Obama has been called. He called up, who do you think called up Pete Buttigieg, or whatever you want to name that name? I frankly want to forget that in the dustbin of history, if we can, to drop out of the race and endorse Joe Biden. Same thing happened with Amy Klobuchar. Barack Obama gave her a phone call. Well, she didn't do so well at all at Super Tuesday, so it wasn't really a big shock that she dropped out of the race, but she dropped out before Super Tuesday.
Well, the whole thing is that whole thing smelled. But you think it's going to be Michelle Obama's vice president.
I think Michelle's going to be nominated to be Joe's VP in order to bring the star power to the ticket, because Joe's not drawing too many. I mean, if you think about it, the Hollywood types are not talking about Joe Biden.
No.
Some of them are talking about Bernie Sanders, but you bring Michelle into the mix, you bring Oprah's backing, you bring money folks from all over the spectrum, you bring the, we can finally finish what Obama tried to start that Donald Trump's trying to wreck, all with the indication, and this is where my Machiavellian side comes out, that if they can win the presidency with that ticket, it probably won't be more than a year at the most before you have a White House physician who declares Joe Biden to be
incompetent
to continue to hold office. And that's for, under the Constitution, if a individual is determined to be incapable of continuing to hold the office, who becomes president, Chuck.
Yeah, the vice pres.
Who then can serve out a 3-year term and then run
again.
Twice.
Yeah.
Can run twice more. It'd be Michelle Obama for 11 to 12 years, folks. That's the game plan.
Okay. I see it.
Yeah. I mean,
but I don't think it's going to happen.
I'm hoping it doesn't happen. Like I told you, I'm hoping against hope that they get to Milwaukee, it becomes a complete and utter circus. It's a complete meltdown, and they end up having to go with somebody milquetoast in order to keep their entire wagon from falling to pieces.
Well, you're actually pointing to Tulsi.
That's exactly who I'm pointing to. Yes.
Because she's 38 years old.
Why do you think she's staying in, Chuck?
At 38, she does 11 years.
Bingo. Well, and she didn't even have to do 11 years.
8 and 3, yeah. 11 years. She's 40 years old when she's out.
Right. But the point is, she didn't even have to do 11 years.
No.
All she has to do is stay in to the convention.
But, okay, we need to explain what we're talking about. 25th Amendment.
Absolutely.
The 25th Amendment basically allows for a president, under certain circumstances, to be declared incompetent to either at his own request or which could happen with Biden, because I think he's aware that he's not as aware as he should be slipping. I mean, the corn pop story and some of these stories he's told, my thought was more like Kamala Harris. However, she is so unlikable and has so many negatives. It would have to be somebody else.
Listen, if Kamala Harris gets anything, which I doubt seriously.
You and I are in agreement on this.
Which I doubt seriously, but if she's offered anything in order to help bring home California for Joe.
Right.
Because remember, Bernie won California.
Yes.
So there's a problem there right now.
Yep.
In order to bring home California for Joe Biden, guess what Kamala Harris is probably going to want?
Well, you and I both have the same thought on this.
Attorney General of the United States. Attorney General. Now, that is a nightmare scenario, considering that Joe just announced that Beto O'Rourke, who he cozied up to on Monday night in Texas in order to win the Texas Democratic primary on Tuesday, he thinks that that's what got him across the line.
It's not.
It wasn't even close. But he's basically told Beto O'Rourke that Beto's going to be handling his gun policy.
Which
means that he's going to be heading up the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, BATF.
Yeah.
That's a nightmare scenario for Second Amendment supporters.
Oh, my gosh. Beto O'Rourke in that office.
Yeah.
That is under the Treasury Department.
That's under Treasury,
they might make him Treasury Secretary. If it's going to be full cabinet position, it's Treasury Secretary.
But you got to remember something. We got to wait till March 17th, my friend.
Oh, I'm aware.
Because Ohio could end up going for Bernie. We have enough of that wing of the party.
Yeah,
and,
it could.
And honestly, it probably won't. I'll just be quite honest with you. But my guess is Joe Biden's going to have to promise certain people certain things. And I would guess that either Rich Cordray, who can get out here and stump for him, who hasn't been, but he could, or Sherrod Brown might be looking for a place. If they think Joe's going to become the consensus nominee and that Michelle or whomever, even Tulsi, he's going to have a ticket that they can get behind and be part of a cabinet, trust me, they're going to broker. Sherrod Brown will be back here next week working his butt off for Joe Biden. He'll be a surrogate every which way you turn.
Oh, yeah. You're not going to be able to get away from Sherrod Brown, depending.
But honestly, I think Sherrod was kind of hoping that chaos does ensue in Milwaukee, because he could make an actual... He could step into the breach and actually give them some pause to think about nominating him, because he's in a bellwether state.
He's a dark horse.
He's as liberal as the day is long, so he checks off all the boxes for the radical Democrats. He's not quite as nutty socialist as Bernie, but he's socialist.
Well,
let's not kid ourselves.
He's not ancient.
And that's the other piece. But the point is that he can win them a bellwether state like Ohio.
Yeah.
And against Donald Trump, that could be very interesting, because I'd have to say it might be a pick 'em if, well, Sherrod Brown is somewhere on that ticket.
It all brings Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania back into play.
Absolutely, it brings every one of them right back into the mix.
Yeah, I mean this is going to be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens on the 17th.
Yeah. So honestly, I mean, we're seeing a lot of stuff that's developing from Super Tuesday, but folks, don't kid yourself. A lot of it's going to depend on what does happen in Ohio because we still have, there's still an awful lot of brokering around Ohio personnel. I mean, you've got Sherrod, who's huge. You have got Rich Cordray, who's still sitting out there. You know, you have got some, there's not a big bench for the Democrats in Ohio who can draw any kind of like heat or excitement, but those two guys can.
Yeah.
So just kind of keep an eye. Let's see, like, now that Super Tuesday's over with and it's getting and everything, the Democrat field has been sifted down to really, really only two. We know that we're only talking about Joe and Bernie, but there's actually still four people.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you completely discount the complete also rans, who nobody even knew that they ever were running.
Right.
There are really only four people still in the race: Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, who came in third in her home state,
both
on Tuesday night,
her birth state and her home state where she's a senator.
Yeah, her senator state. So she came in third place. She didn't win any delegates. Because she didn't break the 15%.
She didn't break 15.
That's pretty bad. Now, I heard today that there was an announcement that Elizabeth Warren was going to take some time to reassess her campaign. Well, that's what Mike Bloomberg said about 8 minutes before he dropped out of the race.
Yeah, right. He announced it last night and made his decision last night and announced it this morning.
I expect Elizabeth Warren to stay in until the Ohio primary? I'm doubting it, seriously. I think she might wait until after the weekend. Because
make them sweat.
Make them sweat and see if they'll offer you something.
See if they'll give you something. Now, honestly, she's so odious. I think maybe basically everybody would take a hard pass.
Yeah, but, you know, they'll give her. I mean, but
they're going to carry Massachusetts without her.
They're going to carry Mass without her. But if they thought that they could use her as a bulwark against Bernie picking up more steam. She's not going to give her delegates to Bernie. I'm going to tell you that right. She's not going to endorse Bernie Sanders in any way, shape, or form.
If she does anything, she'll go to Biden.
She'll go to Biden. And then Tulsi Gabbard is still in. So those four are the only four actual four candidates left. I shouldn't say contenders because there's really only two contenders now. But that means March 17th in Ohio for the Democrats is going to be a very interesting day.
Yeah, it is.
It's going to be a very interesting day. Who's the surrogates? You know, where is it going to go? Ohio's got superdelegates. I mean,
sure.
Yeah, we got a bunch of them. There are a bunch of big donor whales for the Democratic Party in Ohio.
There's a specific number for each state, and I don't remember what it is.
Well, and I can't remember if it's based on their electoral vote or not. I don't think the Democrats went that far, but...
I think it is. It's based on your population and your electoral count.
But anyhow, so it's going to be a very, very interesting Tuesday come March 17th. Because a lot of things are still going to be in play, but I think the one thing that may not be in play sooner rather than later is Bernie's VP. I honestly think he's going with Michelle. I really do.
We should do a friendly wager on that, or we'll figure something out.
I'll buy you a case of your favorite soda pop, and I don't drink soda pop, so I'd do
that. Well, you know what? I don't either. I'm diabetic.
Well, there we go. See, now I know what to bet on, so I don't have to ever pay up.
We more or less beat this dead horse, and we're almost out of time, so I want to go to something that I brought up earlier, and that is money.
I always like to go to money, yes. Yeah,
so think about this. Yeah, I like plenty of money. Mike Bloomberg spent about $600 million. He got about 44 delegates is the number I'm seeing.
Uh-huh.
Those cost him $13.6 million apiece.
Now those are some super delegates. but they're not super delegates.
Now the Democrats who've dropped out, have already spent over $1 billion between them.
Yeah, I mean, you think about those numbers, that just should make you sick to your stomach.
Now, think about this. To not get Donald Trump as the candidate in 16, the Republican Party spent millions.
Hundreds of millions.
Hundreds of millions.
Absolutely.
How much did Donald Trump spend? A pittance by comparison.
If he spent more than $20 million, I'd be surprised.
And it came out of his pocket.
Yep.
This idea that somehow money buys elections.
Okay. Passion.
Yes.
And I said this to somebody earlier today when they were talking about a race down in the Dayton area that's getting contentious. I said, listen, there is no amount of money, media and money that you can buy if you can't outspend what the opponent is spending on shoe leather.
Oh, yeah.
If you've got a candidate in that race and they're just buying shoe leather, i.e., they're knocking on doors, they're getting volunteers, they're going out, they're hitting the neighborhoods, they're talking to people, and they keep doing it. They don't get tired. When it's ugly weather out, they're still out there knocking on doors. If there's a parade or something, they're in it. Yeah. You show me the candidate who's spending their money on shoe leather, and I'll show you the candidate who the money going to media and consultants can't touch.
We've got a race that's the opposite in my...
yes, you do.
That's the opposite of that. And it's getting desperate. I got one today that basically the candidate who was the opponent...
the incumbent.
Yeah, the incumbent, okay. From the incumbent.
Yeah, okay, against the opponent.
Against the challenger.
Who
is not in the Republican Party under the umbrella. He's in the Republican Party, but he's not the chosen one.
He's not an establishment guy.
No, the incumbent is the chosen guy. And he's basically killing him because he's basically this challenger is pointing out he's voted for higher taxes, he's voted for regulation, he's voted with PETA on bills, he's voted for all this, frankly, Democratic stuff.
Right.
And what is happening is that now the desperation is out. They're saying this guy runs an unsafe company, and they cite three citations from, you know, some regulatory body, and first thing I did was laugh. I'm like, a regulatory body can find a violation at will.
Can find a violation in heaven. Come on, folks.
when the regulations are 3 inches thick and you don't spend every waking moment reading them, you're going to violate one from time to time.
Yep.
So they found three violations. Guess what the newest one, what the date on it is?
Probably last week.
2009.
Oh, gosh. So you're looking at ones that are 11
years
old minimum.
One from 2006.
Yeah.
And one from 2005. And he keeps a dangerous workplace. And he doesn't care about his workers. He doesn't care about Ohio workers, that kind of thing. And I'm like, yeah, that might play if you don't actually read the fine print that says these cases are from such and such a date. And if you don't go look them up and find out, it was like somebody didn't wear their steel-toed shoes one day and nobody caught it.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of stuff. He's not forcing people to walk a tight wire over an electric plant to...
Listen, the fake news media can't do much more in the way of lying to people than a political machine can.
No.
A political machine can, because when they've got the money, they will spend it to put out whatever they feel like putting out about their opponents, whether it is even remotely resembling fact or not.
I'll be quite honest. It looks to me like, from what I'm seeing, that they're beginning to abandon this candidate.
That they're realizing that the polling is not going to go in their favor, and no amount of negative they can do. Because I'm guessing that the opponent is putting his money into shoe leather.
Basically.
He's out and networking with folks.
He already knows half the people in the district because he's a businessman. They know him. My wife and I know him.
Yeah.
We know him from other things.
And so do you believe that he's like as dirty a scoundrel as the establishment wants to paint him out
to be? No, I know he's not. And I also know his brother, who's an avid machine gun licensed machine gun shooter.
Well, they'll basically come next and come say that he's anti-Second Amendment, you know.
But that being said, you know, essentially, money isn't buying this election because the Republican Party put a bunch of money into it and then looked at it and said, this ain't going no place. And I pretty much dried it up, I think.
Well, I had heard that the House Republican Caucus, who the incumbent is, they get behind the incumbents, had bought $250,000 in television buy for that race.
Which we'll see on the 16th.
You'll start seeing it probably over the weekend.
Yeah.
Is my guess, is they're going to start running over the weekend because they're looking to try to find something that's going to start softening those polling numbers. Because I'm telling you right now, if an incumbent is attacking their opponent this hard, this early, it's all over for the incumbent.
Yeah, it is. That being said, we are out of time here. So don't get caught up in this thing about how we need to restrict spending, because what that'll do is it'll make sure that the chosen candidates get elected every
time. Last time.
That being said, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.